We have been speaking of the realm of the ideal mind in an air which doubt and error cannot mark with the stigmata of their deformity. Just as our thought and our movement is deformed by the wounds or impressions left by doubt and error, the realm of the ideal mind is free from this deformity. For doubt and error do not obtain where the ideal mind functions. Stigmata, as you all know, are the marks left on the body when you conceive effectively of the sufferings of Christ Jesus on the cross. Even now, there are instances of saints and devotees who in their communion get these stigmata on their arms or other limbs in an air which doubt and error cannot mark with the stigmata of the deformity, in communion with the musing privacy of a truth that sees in an unerring light. The whole atmosphere is in tune with the privacy of a truth that sees unerring, that sees direct, where the sight falters not, nor wanders thought, where the sight goes direct to its object, where thought does not stray from its subject matter, and where, exempt from our world's exorbitant tax of tears, we pay here in our world of suffering and pain a very high tax in the form of tears. But there, this tax does not apply. Dreaming in that air, full of dreams, its luminous creations gaze, the luminous formations of the ideal mind gaze on the ideas that people eternity, that is, the ideas on that level are eternal. They embody eternal truths. In a sunblaze of joy and absolute power, this joy has the blaze of a sun. Intense and unmitigated power above, in that region, the masters of the ideal, the masters of the ideal world, throne themselves, occupy the highest positions, in sessions of secure felicity. Their felicity is secure. It is not open to deformation. It is not open to diminution, because in regions of illumined certitude, it can be a very foolish certitude which proves wrong at the first test, but here it is illumined certitude, illumined with the light of truth. Thus far the description of the high regions of the ideal mind. Then the poet says, far are those realms from our labor and yearning and call. Perfection's reign and hallowed sanctuary, in those realms there is all perfection. There is a hallowed, a sanctified sanctuary, spot close to the uncertain thoughts of human mind. The thoughts of our human mind, which are uncertain in their very nature, they cannot reach there. Remote from the turbid tread of mortal life, those regions are far, far beyond the mixed and soiled tread, footsteps of mortal life. But with all that, since our secret selves are next of kin, our own secret selves here are intimately related to those regions, are next of kin, one step removed. Because of this inner connection between ourselves and these higher regions, a breath of unattained divinity, a single vibration, a single breath of divinity, which has not been so far attained by us, visits the imperfect earth on which we toil. The earth on which we toil is imperfect, but still it embodies deep within itself something intimate, connected, linked with the higher worlds. So from there, a breath of unattained divinity visits the imperfect earth on which we toil. Across a gleaming ether's golden laugh. It is a very favorite expression of Sri Aurobindo. Golden laugh. Laughter, a very spontaneous abandonment. Golden, proceeding from truth. Gold signifies truth in all ancient mysticism. And across a gleaming, shining ether's golden laugh, a light falls from above on our vexed, unsatisfied lives. First a breath, then a light falls on our unsatisfied, troubled lives. And then a thought comes down from the ideal worlds. Third is the thought, breath, light, thought comes down from the ideal worlds and moves us to new model even here in this field of imperfection, we are urged to prepare some new model, a new pattern, some image of their greatness and appeal, some image of the greatness of the ideal worlds and appeal of the ideal worlds, and wonder beyond the ken of mortal hope. The normal mortal hope cannot conceive of that greatness, of that splendor. It is beyond its range. It is a wonder beyond its conception or perception. But still, the thought that comes down pushes us to prepare a new model of these higher worlds of the ideal mind. Now, if it comes down, there is something here which helps, something below which supports, and that is, amid the heavy sameness of the days, our mortal days, they are always the same, and that sameness is very heavy, that is, they are monotonous and contradicted by the human law. Something there is in us which is contradicted by man-made law, and that is a faith in things that are not and must be. Deep within us there is a faith in the possibility of things which are certainly not existent at the moment, but are bound to be at some time. A faith in things that are not and must be lives comrade. This faith in us is like a comrade, a companion, a supporting companion of this world's delight and pain. Surely, this world is full of pain, pleasure and delight, but along with them there is this inborn faith. The child of the secret soul's forbidden desire, born of its amour with eternity. Now, how does this faith come to be? He describes in poetic terms that our secret soul is in love with the eternal. And according to human law, it is a forbidden desire. It is an illegitimate desire. But out of that interchange, communion, between the secret soul and eternity, faith is born. Faith, says Sri Aurobindo, is a perception of the soul, a glimpse of a truth that is not yet justified by the mind. But it goes on exerting itself despite the doubts and contradictions of the surface mind. Faith belongs to the soul and not to the mind. It is belief that belongs to the mind. So, companion with the thought that comes from above, there is here below a faith. The child of the secret soul's forbidden desire, born of its amour with eternity. As a result of all these pressures, our spirits break free from their environment. There is always this environment which oppresses us from all sides, and our spirits are imprisoned. But as a result of the action of the higher ingression and the faith from within, our spirits break free from their environment. The future brings its face of miracle near. The future comes before our eyes, bringing its face of miracle, that is, the possibility becomes almost an actuality. It is a miracle. Its Godhead, Godhead of the future, looks at us with present eyes. Though it is a Godhead of the future, the eyes with which it regards us, they are of the present time. That means they can be actualized at the moment. Acts deemed impossible grow natural. When this happens, what we had considered as impossible things, they become very natural. We feel the hero's immortality. However mortal we may be, we have the halo of the immortality of a hero who has no sense of death. The courage and strength death cannot touch. Strangely, we feel a surge of courage, a vibration of strength that cannot be vitiated by death. These things, the hero's immortality, courage and strength, awake in limbs that are mortal, in our limbs that are mortal. These things awake in hearts that fail, hearts which are accustomed to fail in situations. This courage and strength descend. We move as a result. We move by the rapid impulse of a will. A higher will descends into us, or our own will is triggered by a rapid impulse from above that scorns the tardy trudge of mortal time. The mortal time in which we live has its own slow steps. But this rapid impulse of will scorns. It is so rapid, so fast moving, that it simply scorns the slow trudge of mortal time. These promptings come not from an alien sphere. Promptings such as these certainly do not come from a foreign world, a foreign kingdom. Ourselves are citizens of that mother state, in truth. In fact, we are the citizens of that high state which is the mother of all our lower states. Adventurers, we have come from that mother state. And being adventurers, not content to stay put, we have colonized matter's night. Here is the night of inconscience. nations where there is no consciousness, no sensation, in that night of matter, we have come from there as colonizers. But now, at the moment, in the present situation, our rights are barred, our passports void. We do not have valid passports to that mother state. We will not be admitted at the customs barrier. Our rights are barred, not accepted. We live self-exiled from our heavenlier home. Self-exiled marks the word self-exiled. We have not been forced. We have not been really driven out from the paradise. But we have chosen of our own will as adventurers to colonize the night of matter and establish here the kingdom of God. That is why, till we achieve it, we live in exile chosen by our own will. Freedom, being the inherent truth of God, each one of us has been impelled by our own choice to accept the risk and the wager of this adventure. And then, how has our mind come to be what it is? An errant ray, errant, moving, traveling, journeying, an errant ray from the immortal mind, from the truth mind, from the divine mind, accepted, this is again explaining the adventure, accepted the earth's blindness. That ray of the immortal mind is ever radiant. But it has deliberately accepted the blindness of earth and became our human thought, servant of ignorance, naturally radiant with knowledge. It has allowed itself to be covered and become a servant of ignorance with a purpose, an exile, laborer on this unsure globe, on this globe where nothing is certain, nothing is sure, captured and driven in life's nascent grasp. This human thought, which is a ray from the higher mind, has here been captured, goaded and driven in the grasp nascent, without consciousness, unconscious, grasp of life force, hampered by obscure cell, being in the body, the obscurity of the cells hampers its free movement, and treacherous nerve. The word adjective, treacherous nerve, because nerves don't obey our will. Even when we think everything is all right, a stray nerve suddenly betrays some pain, some anguish, which we thought was no longer with us. So a nerve betrays us into some awareness of something which we had hoped we don't have. An obscure cell and treacherous nerve. Nerve always stores in itself shocks, impacts, which appear as if they have been exhausted. But the nerve carries that vibration and lets us down. An exiled laborer on this unsure globe, captured and driven in life's nascent grasp, hampered by obscure cell and treacherous nerve, it dreams, still with all these handicaps, it dreams of happier states and nobler powers that it once had there, the natural privilege of unfallen gods. Where are fallen gods? But there are unfallen gods, and the happier states and nobler powers are their rightful privilege. So our human thought, recalling still its old lost sovereignty, somewhere at the back, somewhere at some level, there is a remembrance and there is a recall of this lost sovereignty, having descended into this moment of ignorance and inconscience. It has lost, though temporarily, the capacity to have undiluted happiness and unrestricted power. Amidst earth's mist and fog and mud and stone, it still remembers its exalted sphere and the high city of its splendid birth. This single ray from the divine mind, however deformed, however covered by layers of ignorance, deep inside, it still remembers its exalted sphere and the high city of its splendid birth. A memory steals from a lost heaven of truth, some memory, some wave of memory steals in. Memory of a lost heaven of truth. A wide release comes near, and when that happens, some release appears to be near. A glory calls. The glory of the true divine mind summons, calls, a might looks out, an estranged felicity. Somewhere in the depths there is a sudden effusion of strength, might, that looks round, an estranged felicity. There is also a kind of felicity which feels that it is not in its proper environment. It has come in an alien surrounding. In glamorous passages of half-veiled light, I think it's too long a sentence, which I'd better be left for the next time.